Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth. Welcome to the show. Today we have Chris Bellow, who is a pretty fun guy. I've just spent an hour being interviewed by him, and he's got a lot of interesting successes and life lessons to learn. But instead of me doing his introduction, I'm going to let him introduce himself, because he runs a podcast, and I'd love to see how he does this.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah, so what I like to tell people is I'm basically a real estate expert and a podcaster. It's just way easier that way when I tell people, like, I'm in real estate, I deal with properties, residential, and I have a top-rated business podcast on mindset, entrepreneurship, productivity, talking to amazing individuals like yourself. And so that's pretty much it. Hopefully that's exciting enough. Am I a cool enough guest to be on the show? I guess so, if we're hitting record right now. So.
Yeah.
Happy to be anyway. Here.
Cool. Yeah. Do you find it awkward when people ask you what you do in real life? Because I'm kind of not so bad now. I'm pretty like, okay, I run this app and the podcast. That's my main thing. But like the last 10 years, I've kind of just had an existential like, I mean, how much do you want to know, mate? When people ask me that question, they're like, it was a simple question. Just give me an answer. And I'm like,
right.
I don't know where to start.
No, I don't mind when people ask me now. But I mean, to be honest, a few years ago, when I got started on the entrepreneurial path, I didn't know what to say. And the problem was that I was doing so many different things. I think a lot of entrepreneurs do when they start. I was doing like flipping stuff on Amazon, and I wrote a book, and I made a course. Like I was trying to do too many things, and none of them were doing well at all because no one really knew. When they thought of Chris Bellow, they're like, he's doing a bunch of stuff, but like I don't really know what he's the expert in. And now when people think of me in my network, people who meet me, they know of what I do. They know my expertise. They know I've been doing this for several years now. And I think that has translated to a lot more success, where I'm not afraid to talk about what I do now because I can actually put it in a sentence instead of like, well, I kind of do this and that. And, you know, sometimes I do this too. And then they're like, okay, you're clearly not a serial entrepreneur like you think you are. You're just dabbling in a bunch of different things. So kind of the singular focus, which is a key part of what I like to teach people in terms of productivity, is just got to get really focused on what it is that you actually want to do and be an expert in.
Have you read the Key Person of Influence book?
No, I'm going to write that down. The Key Person of Influence.
It's a really good book. But yeah, it does talk about like being able to nail your pitch of when people ask you what you do or something. You're like, hey, I stand for this. This is what I'm doing. So people like know, like you say, you can become like first of mind when they think of you and things, and you can be like Googleable for said thing and as an expert, etc. So if you're like trying to do everything, you're kind of not doing anything, which yeah, maybe on your personal side, you do want to do lots of different things, but as far as what the world sees, like you do need to have like a niche and something. So that's, well, it's one of the five steps of things, just like working out what your niche is and then being able to like pitch that as your thing.
Exactly. I was going to say one book that's helped me. I haven't heard that, but I wrote it down, The Key Person of Influence. Have you read The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan?
Yeah.
That one has been a game changer because literally it asks you the question, what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else becomes easy or unnecessary? Something along those lines. And when you ask yourself that question, it helps you realize like, oh, I don't have to do these 10 things on my to-do list. I'm using air quotes for those listening. I only have to do maybe one or two of these things that will really knock away all those other dominoes that you think are things that you should be doing.
The same as like baggage that we tie ourselves to is not important.
Yeah, we just give ourselves tasks.
Yeah, when you're trying to build a business, it's sort of, you can spend a whole year like trying to code something together or something, when like the first most important thing is to do is to work out if people want it and like nail down what is the one thing that is like the most biggest assumption that you've got of, and then like find a way to test that, whether it's like in WhatsApp groups or like whatever, is just sort of testing stuff as quickly as possible and like proving yourself wrong as quickly as possible as well. And if not, then like, sweet, you can go ahead with it. But yeah, good points. So yeah, nice. Sounds like you do a lot of interesting things. So what would be interesting is to kind of, yeah, work a bit backwards then, as that's how we did things earlier. Was like you said, you're running your real estate business and you're running your podcast and you used to do quite a few different things. Can you kind of tell me the journey of how you ended up where you are and then kind of go back to like what you're doing before and then like what were you doing like at uni or like college, or did you even go to college? Like these?
Sure. So I think my story probably resonates with a lot of people listening right now. I mean, I never really stopped to think about what I actually want out of my life, like what goals I want to set for myself, until years after graduating from university or uni. I never really thought about what I wanted to do. And so up to that point, I had gone to school, I made friends, I joined a few clubs. I went to high school where a lot of my friends went to, like a Jesuit college preparatory school. From there, I went to a college or university that a lot of my friends went to, Texas A&M University. I'm actually wearing a t-shirt from there, even though I'm like, I don't know, I'm not a diehard like university supporter or anything, but it's a t-shirt that I bought years ago and it's comfortable. And so, you know, that's why I'm wearing it. But I got a job in oil and gas. You know, it's a very big industry in Houston, Texas, where I'm from. And I started to realize, like, you know, I'm not very interested in this stuff. Like, I'm not excited when I wake up in the morning. I don't want to go to work. And is there something wrong with me? Only to find that there were other people in the world who felt similarly. You know, as I read books like 4-Hour Workweek, I discovered that I wasn't the only one who had these feelings of like, why do I just want to pound my head into a brick wall every time I come into the office and sit in this cubicle all day, right? So that's when I quit the job in 2017. And I was doing everything. I was trying to flip stuff on garage sales on eBay and Amazon, put a book up on Amazon that like had no sales pretty much, and try to create a course on how I flipped stuff from garage sales. Like, I was just trying to make a quick buck and create sales funnels and do Facebook ads, but I had no real focus. But I knew I wanted to be successful. I knew I liked the control of my time. And like, it was probably a year into that that I started to get very focused, and I kind of narrowed my sights onto real estate. And so for real estate, I've been focused on that for a few years now, as well as my podcast. Both, I think, I've been doing for over 3 years at this point. And now that I've said no to every other distraction, even disguised as opportunities, a lot of times great opportunities or ideas actually are probably distractions. That's when I started seeing success. That's when I started seeing the downloads increase in my podcast. I just recently passed 1 million overall downloads. Had a record real estate month as well. So I don't want to say all these things to like brag or anything. It's just like, it's showing that the power of focus, it's like a magnifying glass. Whenever the sun's showing on the earth, I think this might've been from The One Thing as well. Like, nothing really happens. You feel the warmth and stuff. But when you have a magnifying glass and you take the power of the sun and you focus it on a single point, like that's when you see a leaf start to burn. You know, the smoke comes out of the leaf because you're focusing all that energy on a single thing. And I know on my show, you said you never really had a proper job. Like, you'd always did entrepreneurial things, creating opportunities for yourself. So I wish I had done that sooner, honestly. I was stuck in the rat race for quite some time.
On the flip side, I kind of would like to have somehow spent a few years in a corporate job somewhere. I just can't quite do the part of spending a few years of doing it. But like, I do believe in like diverse experiences, and would like to have known about a bit more about what that would have been like.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to it, right? I had benefits. I had a steady paycheck every 2 weeks. But I mean, the cons, like, you don't have control of your time. You have 10 days of vacation, at least in the US, a year. Yeah. Jeez. Like, man, I can't go anywhere.
Can't handle that. Yeah, I'm very used to doing things when I want to do them. That's definitely a really nice thing, which most people don't actually have.
Exactly.
But you kind of take for granted. Nice.
Small businesses have always shown an incredible ability to adapt, innovate, and survive, even more so this past year. Now, another way you can adapt and grow is by finding the right people to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs helps you do that for free, and I've had great results from such a diverse talent pool compared to my direct network. Get started by posting your job for free to reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. Fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of most qualified candidates, the experience, skills, and the motivation that you need. Well, then just simply filter and use the management tools that help you easily review, rate, and hone in on your top candidates. Then, with simple filtering and management tools, you can easily review, rate, and hone in on your top candidates. So, LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person for your role, and your first job post is free. Just visit linkedin.com/growth. Again, that's linkedin.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So I guess, like, talking first about like your podcast then, how did you start that and what was the goal of it and how did you work out what your focus should be?
So in terms of the timeline, I quit my corporate job in April 2017 to pursue like an invention idea, which I don't even have it like on the website or social media. I don't even do anything with it anymore. It was like an idea that I tried and it failed. Like, we basically ran out of money and I didn't have any passion for it, which, for those listening, obviously find something you're passionate about. Otherwise, when things get hard, you're not going to want to stick with it. Like, I was like, this is hard, it's expensive, I've blown through my savings to try to invent this thing that I'm not even really interested in anymore. And so I started a podcast in October of 2017, later that year, to document my journey, my learnings, interviews with other people. And I started releasing one episode a week, and it evolved to two a week. And of course, I think at any given point in time, I usually have like 7 or 8 pre-recorded episodes. I'm just like, today I've got you on my show, I'm on your show, and then I have two other podcasts as well. Like, Tuesdays are my content days. I learn a lot, I connect with amazing people, and I also get ahead of schedule where, cool, I've already recorded enough podcasts for 2 weeks of content in a single day.
Nice. I mean, then when you first started, you must have been editing and doing everything all yourself. I'm guessing now that you've got like other people to help you with it. But how did you make that transition?
Gosh, I wish I could say I found help sooner, especially since I studied supply chain in university. Like, I studied outsourcing and delegating and bidding with suppliers to do certain tasks. But I guess I was so caught up in it that I didn't step back to focus on it, on the business like people talk about or the E-Myth talks about. And so I think I spent probably about 2 years, almost 2 years, editing it, recording it, doing everything, creating a thumbnail for the YouTube videos. And I finally got introduced to a virtual assistant through a mutual friend who we started experimenting, like, how can we work together? Do I give him some research tasks? Or like, I couldn't find a good way for us to get into a rhythm. And then he decided to develop that niche or niche of focusing only on podcast production services, which helped me like, oh, of course, you can edit all my podcasts and cut the video, take out the uhs and the ahs and put the intro and outro MP3 music in there. Put it all in Google Drive so that I can just upload it and be done with it. And so now I kind of delegate very quickly. Anytime there's anything that comes up, I always ask myself that question, should I be doing this or should my assistant be doing this or someone on my team? And I have 4 or 5 virtual assistants in the Philippines right now. They do an amazing job. I pay them at the end of each month for the services rendered. I pay them on time. As soon as they invoice me, pay them right away because they've saved me hours of my life and they've given me my sanity back, quite honestly.
Cool. Yeah. Similar to me, I guess. It's quite okay. Full-time VA as well from Philippines.
And so helpful. It's great.
Yeah. Doing my catch-ups with him. So that's how you got to being able to do all those things. And I mean, did it take a while to be able to make money and stuff through the podcast? Like, how did you go around that?
So I guess the thing is with the invention that I try to do with a friend, I try to create something and make money without even having an audience, without really having any kind of presence or following of some sort. And so with the podcast, I started listening to the guy named Miles Beckler. He's an affiliate marketer, digital marketer guy. Probably has like 130,000 followers on YouTube at this point. He's been growing. And so he kind of mentioned, take entrepreneurship as you have this big steaming pile of crap and you have to shovel it with this little spoon and create another pile. And it's going to take 3 years. You're not going to love it. It's going to be a long, painful journey, but that is the path. He's like, that's just the path. Take your little spoon, start scooping one at a time and moving that pile. And so once I took that approach, I decided I'm going to just add value and start to grow a following and just have fun with it. I'm not going to worry about how am I going to make money off of this thing. I'm just going to let it become something fun. So to be completely honest with you, it's kind of taken off in a way where it's hard to quantify the money that I've made through it because it's been like relationships and friendships. And I mean, I've met like a top investor in Colorado from interviewing him on my show. So now that I moved over here like 2 or 3 weeks ago, we have plans to connect and he's doing deals at a high level. That's a connection. I don't know how much that will be worth to me over the length of my career, like the deals that we do, the business that we send each other possibly. So it's a little hard to quantify like how much money I've made from it. But in terms of real estate, for example, I can attribute 2 or 3 conversations that I've done deals with people who I've interviewed in my market. I've gotten referrals, people reach out. I've coached people through my podcast who've reached out and asked if they could pay me to coach them, which I no longer really do. I kind of tried it, but it was a distraction, right, from my real estate stuff. So again, I'm always like, no, Chris, like I'm slapping my hand. It looks like an opportunity, but do you really need to be coaching one-on-one on how to create a podcast when you can just do a few real estate transactions and make way more money in less time without doing all the work yourself, you know? Like, I don't want to trade my time for money.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess it depends on, like you were saying earlier, that you have reached the point now where you actually have a bit more time and you're not so focused on the business because it's going well and you could be making more money, but you don't really need to just earn more money doing something that you're like aware of how to
exactly.
do it. It's so exciting. So
right.
is now the time to get more distracted and like try seeing coaching and working out what's wrong with everyone, and maybe you can turn that into a course or maybe an entire like business, or maybe just not inspired by that so you can try something else.
No, that's a great question. I mean, that is what I'm thinking about. I literally have it on my whiteboard here of like activities to do, things to try. I mean, I want to go rock climbing and camping and hiking and go dirt biking and all kinds of crazy things. But you're right. I am doing some soul searching. Like, what lights me up? Do I want to do group coaching? Do I want to offer a mastermind? Do I want to teach other real estate professionals how to create a business where they're not the one who has to answer every phone call? How do you make money and separate yourself from the business? I'm kind of experimenting with that right now, but I am also at this peaceful place where I'm just kind of enjoying having the time to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun, freeing feeling like, oh, I've got money coming in still. And sometimes I get bored because I have too much time. Mm. So I am trying to fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And maybe like you're a bit bored, but perhaps like, chilling
it's
out,
better than
stepping
a job.
Back a bit for like a month or something, and then like actually doubling down for a year and be like, okay, I've got this far.
Exactly.
I could make this sort of, maybe you can make it like 5 times, 10 times bigger over next year and like sell it for like a lot of money and like be set for a long time or something. And
for sure.
Maybe doesn't delight you instantly, but actually when you think of what the goal is that you're going to get for a year, it's like, okay, you could work towards that and it could be worth like, yeah.
And that's the beauty of having the flexibility. I could take a month off and then go hard for a year and sell it, or I can just kind of have this lifestyle business that feeds me and funds me.
So that it's like a part-time thing permanently. You have check-ins on Monday and a Friday, and otherwise you don't do anything. And that could be a great place to get to also.
Exactly. So I guess the thing is, as long as you're asking yourself, what interests me? What does my dream business look like? I do a lot of journaling about that. So I'm constantly tweaking. And then that's how I found out, like, you know, I don't want people to book me on Calendly on Friday night. Like I want that time to myself. And so no one can book me on Fridays. No one can book me on Sundays. And that's kind of helped me create this schedule where, whoa, I have 4 hours of podcast today, but no one can book me on Friday. So Friday's free. And that happened through thinking and by design.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. Do you believe a lot in the power of journaling? And so I'm interested, like, what other questions do you try and ask yourself when you are journaling? Because mainly I'm like just reflecting what happened that day and work out like what's been pissing me off over the week and sort of try and change things. But do you sort of have more proactive questions around like, okay, what are the 5 things I could change today in my business or anything? Like, do you have any tips?
Yeah. So for me, that's a great idea. I haven't really implemented like what are the 5 things I could change to make things better, but I'm constantly asking myself questions based on how I'm feeling. And I'll usually put the day and the time. So I'll say it's like April 6th at 12:33 PM or whatever. And I'll say, you know, I just had this great conversation with Sam and he was mentioning all these questions that I should ask myself. So here are 3 questions that he mentioned that I'm going to answer right now. And it's really more reflecting on my day, how it's going, maybe how I feel. Sometimes like I'll journal about, man, I'm kind of in this weird funk. I'm like kind of bored and everyone that I know is at work right now. Like maybe I need more entrepreneurial friends. And then I might even do something like a perfect day exercise of just journaling out. What does my perfect day look like? Very, very vivid detail. And then am I doing those things now? And if not, why not? Like, what do I need to do to achieve that perfect day every day? Is it waking up at a certain time, doing my morning routine, working out, riding my bike, like getting very, very detailed. And then I can know what do I need to do to align with that perfect day. So it more is like to reflect on how I'm feeling, things that are going wrong maybe in my day, or maybe even like that perfect vision that I want to work towards. And how do I bring that vision and where I am now? How do I kind of connect those two and merge them so that I can live that reality?
Nice. Yeah, I love that. It's being entrepreneurial, really. It's sort of, I still get the struggle with mixing with the stoic side of like just accepting reality as it already is and being content and enjoying your life versus actually what is in my surroundings that I can change to improve things for like myself and everyone around kind of thing. But working towards that change, but not being unhappy until you reach it, I guess is the goal.
Precisely. That's been the challenge for me too, because we talked about it on my show, the grass always appears greener on the other side. And what I have now is what I wanted a year or two ago, but now I want something else. You know, why am I always unhappy? And so not unhappy, but like I'm hungry for more, right? You hit the 10K months, you hit the 25K months, you want 50, 100, 100 million a month. I don't know. And like we talked about, at a certain point, the money kind of, it doesn't make that much of a difference in terms of happiness after a certain point. And so that kind of prompted the move for my girlfriend and I. We moved from Houston, Texas to Colorado. I was like, I want to be around mountains. I bought a bike. I rode 13 miles yesterday. I don't know what that is in kilometers. It's like 1.6 kilometers is a mile or something, right?
Yeah, it's like 21, 22 kilometers.
Yep, 20 kilometers, 20.9. There you go. You're right 21, on the dot.
Boom.
21. Dang, that conversion.
Yeah, it's like half plus a little bit. That's how my brain works.
That's good.
Basically a human calculator, you know.
Yeah, you're basically like a mathematical genius, so.
Many people don't know this. Cool. Yeah, so that was nice to hear about your journaling, and yeah, it's definitely some different things. So you said you just randomly then, because some people like they just do it every morning. Some people it's like a thing as you go into bed. And I literally just, the podcast just came out like this morning on my side was about morning routines and not trying to stuff too much into it. Because I just felt like there's been so much like hustle porn around, like get up at 5 a.m. and then do your workout and then do your meditation and then have like your green tea smoothie kale thing.
That's like my morning routine.
Write a book and then do this other thing. You're like, Jesus Christ, like, I'm just trying to like, I've already run out of the whole day. What's going on?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a bit ridiculous. And like, maybe just do one thing in your morning routine. And if you wake up early, do something else as well. But like, don't.
Yeah. I definitely understand what you said, like the hustle porn thing of like 4 hours of morning routine and then you do this and that. And by the time you get started with your workday, it's like lunchtime and then you need to take a lunch break. I mean, for anyone who's listened to or read the book, The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod, that's what I've been doing for like over 2 years at this point. And I do spend about an hour every single day. If I'm on vacation or something, or I go out on a trip, or, you know, I have to leave early for a road trip, like when we drove here from Houston, I'll cut it short. Like I might cut out the 30 minutes of reading. I'll just do quick meditation, look at my vision board. I have a picture of it on my phone and kind of visualize that perfect future I see for myself. And I'll cut it short to maybe 5 or 10 minutes if I need to, but I'll at least do something. But if I'm in a, you know, my normal routine, like now I'm all settled into the new place. I have the furniture assembled. I have a desk that I'm using right now. I'll spend about an hour journaling, meditating, reading. I'll go to the gym, do a workout. And I love it because I feel super productive. Like I've learned something. I've reflected on how yesterday went and what I'm going to do today in my journal, which I usually journal every single morning in Google Docs, but I also journal handwritten here throughout the day in my notepad. And this is more sporadic in my notepad where I'm just like, okay, well, this didn't go so well, or I got interviewed on a podcast and, you know, the guy was kind of rude or whatever, you know, like whatever I'm thinking. Whereas the morning is kind of a reflection of yesterday was awesome. I killed it. I knocked out all my goals. Today, these are the things on my calendar. I'm looking forward to this thing at 2 p.m. Let's see how it goes. Something like that.
Cool. Thanks for that. Maybe I am going to start doing more of that.
And there's no right way to do it. It's like, do what feels
it's
good
like
to
writing.
You. Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess also what things are like hard for you is, and I just like running. So I kind of get that in the day anyway, whereas other people are like, if they don't do the running first thing, it's just not going to happen. And so like, okay, maybe running should be your first thing. But for me, it's like, if I get to 6 o'clock and haven't been for a run, like I'm going for a bloody run. Doesn't matter how tired I am kind of thing. So it's not something I need to work on. Whereas like, if I haven't journaled or if I haven't meditated first thing, then like it might be just never happens. So like that's more of a thing that I should do then kind of.
Exactly. And another thing that I love about getting it done in the morning, I mean, it's just nice to get it out of the way. You feel like you've accomplished so much more than other people who maybe are just waking up or they just got to work. Like I'm done with my routine by 7:30 in the morning or 8 usually. And also fun fact, like I'm not super hardcore wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock like David Goggins or whoever. I started following Tom Bilyeu's advice. If you guys have listened to Impact Theory on YouTube or podcast, really good stuff. And Tom Bilyeu says a lot of people, they're chronically tired because of waking up to an alarm and they're not sleeping enough. So I stopped setting an alarm in the mornings, and surprisingly, I've still been waking up naturally. By going to bed at 10 or 10:30 at night, I've been waking up at 6 or 6:30 a.m., even without an alarm clock, like to a T. And so I feel refreshed, relaxed. I'm not annoyed that I have to hit stop on the alarm. I wake up and I'm like, oh, wow, it's 6:30 a.m. Like, perfect. Didn't need an alarm or anything to disrupt my sleep.
Yeah, I've read Why We Sleep, and that's definitely made me like super prioritize sleeping.
Oh, yeah, sleep's important.
It's like, you're like, whoa, it's probably been more helpful than half of the business books so in terms of just like...
Just like, man, if I was just sleeping 8 hours a night, I'd be doing way better.
Yeah, I've generally just always hit like kind of six and a half hours on average. And it's just maybe like, no, you should definitely be getting more like 7.5. And so it's prioritized a lot more. It's been good. Okay, so then the whole other thing is like your property business. How did you get into that exactly? Because you said that that was just one of the ideas and then you turn that into a business. But like, more details, please.
Yeah, and especially people are more curious about how the heck I'm doing that remotely. Like, I'm not even in the town that I'm doing it in anymore. So I talked about flipping stuff. Like, I would find stuff from garage sales and buy it, you know, $20 and list it at 50. Like, I kind of know what they were worth based on recent sales. And I was making small chunks of change here and there. Sometimes I'd buy something that wouldn't sell. But I started listening to a podcast called Bigger Pockets. Like, it's one of the top business podcasts for real estate, property, you know, real estate agents, investors, everything real estate related. And in that podcast, I heard an episode with a Houston-based company that did something called wholesaling. They call, you know, house buying companies that are investors that buy these properties that are like, they need TLC, they're run down, maybe divorced sales or has fire damage in the property. And I looked them up and they were only 10 minutes from my home address. And so this was kind of like a part in the story where while I tell people I quit my day job and I hated the corporate life in oil and gas, I did join a team that was like, it didn't feel corporate at all. It was like sales role. I worked with two guys, you know, they're 30-year-old owners of the company. Come in when you want, bring your dog, unlimited vacation policy. I worked with them for about a year doing this thing called wholesaling, which basically you're finding a seller who wants to sell the house and you're finding a buyer who wants to flip the house and you make a margin in the middle, usually like $10,000, $15,000, a pretty good profit for like a 2 or 3 week turnaround time in many cases. And so that got me my foot in the door in real estate. And the beauty is I made connections, I networked through there, I learned the scripts and how to approach sellers and just the psychology of the words you use and talking to people who are in a tight situation. Like, how do you make them sell their most prized asset even though they need to because they can't afford to make payments, for example? And so that got my foot in the door. I got my real estate license since then, and I've gone off on my own where I've been doing real estate transactions as a real estate agent, as well as some wholesale deals as well, those off-market things that I talked about earlier. But it all comes full circle because I'm still collaborating with that company. I left on good terms, for example. They still give me deals. So they bought a house from a seller who has a house that needs a lot of work and just needs to get rid of it. And that guy needs to buy another house. So I'm helping him buy that house, making like $4,000 from literally maybe a week of work. Like, we found him a house, we made the offer, he closed on his house for sale, he's downsizing to another one that doesn't need work, and I'm going to have a $4,000 commission while that other person, I guess that company's probably making $10,000 or $15,000 from the sale of his house. So that, I don't know if I answered the question, but I kind of got into real estate from listening to a podcast while I was at the gym figuring out, what the hell am I going to do? I'm making like $20 flipping shoes from garage sales, it's not significant enough, to actually going to these things where you're flipping contracts and making way bigger checks. Because, you know, real estate, high ticket item, a lot of equity in the home, you can make a lot more money.
Nice. So do you think, I mean, you said you're doing that remotely now. Do you think that's something you could start remotely, or would you need to have done it in person initially before you could then get to the position that you're in with your business?
So I do know several people who do virtual wholesaling. For anyone who wants to Google that or watch YouTube videos, there's plenty of stuff on it, but the advice is to really get focused on a certain market, like get very specific. So if I'm in like Texas and I want to wholesale in Ohio or something, you want to know that market, find a few people who can be your boots on the ground folks who can actually go to a house, take pictures, meet a buyer out there to actually buy the property. But you could do it all virtually. I know people who do, and they close deals remotely. For a real estate agent, it's a little bit different because it's more of a personal relationship. And it's still working with a lot of my clients that are millennials. They're cool with Zoom calls, text messages. I have people who are going to go look at houses this weekend and they don't even know that I'm not even in Houston anymore. I just told them that, hey, Alex on my team is going to be meeting you to show this house, and then we'll get the offer written up if you're interested in making the offer on the house. And so I think it is something you can do virtually. Although if you're going to go specifically a real estate agent route, that business, sometimes people like to see your face in person. But again, with COVID, I think it's enabled a lot of this virtual stuff. Zoom calls have replaced a lot of face-to-face meetings. And so I'm kind of just taking that and run with it. I'm like, okay, cool. Everything can be a Zoom call. I no longer have to drive 20 minutes to go meet you for coffee if we can just do a Zoom call and I do 10 times the meetings in a day.
That's interesting. And what I'm immediately thinking is, so you like learned the ropes working for some people and went and started your own business. And so you're now kind of scaling your business. But what's stopping any of the people that are working for you from like listening to your podcast, how you started it, and just going and doing their own thing?
The thing that's beautiful about it, I guess it's maybe something as a millennial thing. Like I'm very non-committal. Like I don't want to commit to something. Like I have a WeWork membership. I pay $299, like $300 a month. I can cancel it at any time. A lot of things are moving towards that membership model. Like just pay this thing monthly. You can cancel. Just give me a 30 days notice. That's kind of how I operate with my team too. I don't really have overhead. I kind of mentioned it earlier when we were talking that I'm pretty much a solopreneur, but I have virtual assistants and I have real estate agents that help show properties for me. And we just structure the deal a certain way. So I kind of convince people like, hey, if you help me with this client, show these houses, go to the inspection, do all these things in person now that I'm not there in town anymore, you'll get paid when the deal closes, you know, 50% of the commission or whatever. So say it's a $10,000 commission for them doing all of the work, they'll get paid $5,000, which is pretty good for showing a house, writing an offer, maybe going to it one or two more times before the closing. And so they already have their own business on the side too. They have their own clients. And so while I tell people, hey, you know, you don't have to commit to me, but I just ask, you know, if you don't want to work with me, just let me know ahead of time and why, and vice versa. Like if I'm not feeling it, I kind of let a VA know like, hey, so I'm going to assign these tasks to someone else who I think can do the job a little bit better at a better rate or whatever the case is. So I think that's why I'm not afraid of the competition. Like if I teach somebody something who's working with me and they decide to leave entirely and do it on their own, like that's fine. I think abundance and the law of attraction, there's plenty of opportunities for all of us. But I think especially for the people that I'm kind of grooming some up and coming talent, they don't have that business yet. They don't have much of a clientele base. And so they're attracted to me because I do, and I can feed them this business where they can make money right away while also learning from me, who's kind of, I've done this for a few years now. So I guess hopefully that answers your question. I'm not afraid of them leaving and doing their own thing because I'm like, I might do the same thing. I kind of just skipped town and went to Colorado, for example. I love the flexibility.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, it's, I really like that mindset, and certainly how I feel about businesses that I start or anything, because definitely taking on talent that you can teach and give them skills, and maybe they will leave in a year. Certainly for like running a business as entrepreneurs, and the first people you want, you maybe aren't like the people where you can give them exactly specific tasks, and you do want like entrepreneurial people that in a few years time are going to start their own business and probably be really successful. But you can help them like learn the processes in the way that like can trust them to like think outside the box and come up with solutions themselves, whilst you're also teaching them to have more confidence and do all these things.
Exactly. And I think a lot of entrepreneurial people, like the company that I worked with for a little bit that did wholesaling, you know, 30 or 32 year old owners, they told us in the team meetings, they're like, hey, I want everyone to come here like and be successful. I want you to drive up here and come to work in a Ferrari. Like that's what they want. Usually companies like, you know, my oil and gas company, if you're driving too nice of a car, they're like, oh, we're paying you too much. I remember hearing someone say that like, oh, that's your Mustang GT. Like we're paying you too much. It wasn't me. Someone else had this like fancy car. And that's kind of the mindset versus an entrepreneurial mindset. We don't mind grooming other entrepreneurs because we're attracted to like-minded people. So I kind of gravitate more towards the people who want to be successful and who have the drive to do more than just work for me or with me. They want to do their own thing. Like I embrace that.
Yeah, it's definitely a good mindset to have. Yeah, do you have any philosophies around like how you're approaching enjoying your work besides these things, like always having like the freedom to do your own thing, or anything that you haven't spoken about that's sort of a bit different?
Yeah, I guess my philosophy right now at the moment is just do what you love. I follow people like Gary Vee, and he's like, stop doing shit you hate. You know, like if you don't like to do it, why are you doing it? And so that kind of prompted me to quit the job that I wasn't passionate about and try things out. You talked about it on my show. I wrote it down here to just experiment. You said idea dating. I love that. I mean, you're not going to know what you love. You have to try different things and find out what feels good to you. How do you do more of that? And better yet, if you can do a hobby that you can make money from, even better. And so my philosophy is do more of what you love and do less of what you hate. And you can delegate. If you hate it, you can delete it, delegate it, outsource it. You don't have to be doing it if it's something that has to be done. And when you do that, it's like, wow, I actually love waking up every day. I don't have a tired feeling at 2 p.m. I'm doing 4 hours of podcast today, but it energizes me, right? So when you do more of what you love, I guess you're happier because you're doing what you love all day. It sounds so common sense, but it's so true.
A few things that I try to ask everyone is, what's one of your earliest memories?
One of my earliest memories, I'd probably say, I think in third grade, I don't know why, when Pokemon was a thing, like I was in third grade, and I remember trading a Mew, like I liked this girl, and I gave my Charizard away for a Mew, and I gave her the Mew because I just had a crush on her, and I realized later that like that was the worst trade ever. I know that's random, but like for some reason, third grade really stands to mind. I was not entrepreneurial at all. Clearly, I was a bad businessman. I traded a great card for one that was like not even a holographic.
Wow. You're not a bad card.
Mew was pretty cute, but I mean,
it wasn't the Charizard's dark one, like... was it? If it was a dark Charizard, mate, you messed that up.
I don't know if it was a dark Charizard. I think it was just a regular one, but yeah.
Still shiny. It was a good card.
It was.
Sorry to hear that. Still, I guess you learned. And
I learned not to get burned.
To this girl? I mean,
I don't even know where she is anymore. I don't even think we're connected on social media. So,
I'm sure she's made a big mistake there.
Yeah, really. She probably didn't even appreciate the Charizard that much either, or the Mew. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Okay, and then what's one of the kindest things that someone's done for you?
One of the kindest things, that's a great question. I mean, it's so easy to just get caught up in what we want to do next, especially if you're hustling and you've got all these goals as an entrepreneur. I guess I'd have to put it on my parents because they, you know, I know you said you're grateful your parents are still together. Mine are too. They've done so much for me. They've made sacrifices for us. They sent us to private school. Like they always wanted to send us to the best schools possible, even though they couldn't necessarily always afford it. Like they sacrificed having nicer cars that they could have had to put it into our tuition. And so I'd say that, I mean, they've sacrificed their whole lives. Most good parents probably do that for their kids. And I say good parents because there's plenty of bad ones out there. That's the nicest thing I can think of because they still consistently are selfless. You know, if you've ever been sick and your mom, you know, when you lived at home and your mom's taking crazy care of you, we're so selfish these days. Like even if my girlfriend's deathly sick, I'm like, okay, are you feeling good? Here's some soup. Like, I'm going to go to the gym real quick. Like, it's hard to take that kind of care, I guess, as maybe your own kid. And so I'd have to thank my parents for being super selfless because they just continue to do kind acts after kind acts, you know?
Cute.
Yes. Thanks, Mom, Dad.
Yeah. Good to hear. Okay. Then any philosophies or like things you'd want to leave people with?
Yeah. So my podcast tagline that I like to drop is less dreaming, more doing, because it's important to dream. I mean, I have my vision boards on my phone wallpaper. It's on my computer laptop background. It's everywhere so I can see it and have those vivid visions. But none of that stuff's going to magically happen. And so I always like to tell people less dreaming, more doing. Like at a certain point, you have to stop studying. You have to stop reading the books. You have to stop just looking at the vision board for 5 hours a day and start taking actions. Make a plan, work the plan. And that's how you get to the success that you're seeking. And when you get there, like I have the time freedom, now I have new problems. I'm like, what do I do with all this time? I'm kind of bored. Like I need more purpose. Maybe I need to volunteer or donate parts of my income. I'm not sure. I'm working towards that. And I'm constantly asking myself, what feels good? How do I do more of that?
Cool. Nice. And then, yeah, where can we find you?
Yeah, so you can find me. I guess I'm most active on Instagram. My IG handle is chrisbello_. I'm also on the Clubhouse app sometimes. I haven't been on there in like a week or something, but I've been jumping on there, having conversations. And then also my website, chrisbello.com, which there's some bug or some crash or something happened. So I got to fix that. But hopefully by the time this goes live, that will be up and running and whatever issues out there will be resolved.
Cool. And your podcast?
Oh yeah, of course. I forgot. I didn't have this podcast, by the way. It just passed 1 million downloads a couple weeks ago, which is cool. It's called the Entrepreneur Motivation Podcast. And of course, you can catch our episode on there. For those listening to your show, Sam, you can come listen to Sam on my show. We talked about a lot of great stuff, and I was excited to have you on as a guest.
Cool. Thanks. And podcast on Syncify. If you want to connect with Chris there, you can see him.
For sure.
Which is, cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much. That was a really interesting interview and learned lots of really handy things. I'm definitely going to try the Miracle Morning. And yeah, looking forward to maybe seeing you in Colorado or somewhere.
Yeah, let me know. We could go hike a mountain or something if you're ever in town.
Yeah, I do like hiking mountains, as we know. That's a thing. Sweet. Cool. Well, stay safe and hopefully see you in the not too distant future of like 5 years' time.
For sure. Sounds good, Sam. Thanks again for having me on.
My pleasure.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.